Good afternoon, everyone. Hello. Buenas noches, buenos dias, así, guten tag, bonjour. Hello. There we go. So real quick here, before I get to the actual talk, because they're going to record this, just a moment. That's not fun. I'm starting a video. I want everybody to say hello, because I got to prove to my wife that I'm not actually over here just on a boondoggle, drinking beer and eating lots of jambones. So everybody say hello from Tech Ed. One, two, three. Hello.
Hello.
Thank you. And we're in Madrid, right, folks?
Yeah, thanks.
I knew I could count on the troublemakers to disagree with me. Stop it. I'm going to be in trouble now. All right. So welcome to Continuous Deployment with Microsoft Visual Studio. My name is Brian Randall. I'm a senior consultant and partner with MCW Technologies. So who am I is here, and what you probably care about is you can harass me on email, you can harass me on Twitter, or you can go to my blog. And from my blog in particular, I'll show you that I've put some links for this talk up there that you might find interesting. Now, who are you? Maybe. Possibly. Oh yeah, we all feel this way sometimes. When we think about how we deploy our applications, the software we build for our customers, a lot of times the whole process is arcana stored in documentation that's as dusty and old as parts of Europe. And basically, when we think about the process, it stinks. When we think about the problems with deploying applications today, the big three tend to be, number one, it's some manual deployment process using docs. And in fact, there's people that are actually proud of their documentation for how they do deployments. Right? We've written it all down. It's very clear. How many of you have ever had trouble simply typing a new password in from a piece of paper onto the computer screen? We're talking a few sets of characters. Yet with a 50-page document, you're not supposed to mess anything up. How about we only deploy when development is done? The problem with that is many organizations have a different definition of done, which often is we're a little too late. We kind of miss that opportunity. And the other problem is that any type of deployment requires manual configuration of the environments by humans. Now, I talked to some of you earlier, but real quick, is anybody an IT pro whose job is to manage a data center? Anybody? No. So you're mostly developers, right? You know, you don't have to admit if you're a manager too, but we're developers, right? Well, we have good employment because we are writing the code. Unfortunately, some of the IT pros, they like the fact that they have to do it manually because it keeps them employed. But we start talking about managing thousands of servers. We start talking about virtualization. In the keynote this week, they talked about Telefonica consolidating down and having 18,000 virtual machines. You know, I'm thinking I don't want to do that by hand. Just going to say it. So we start thinking about why continuous deployment, it's pretty obvious. The traditional deployment options, where we go often from development to operations, and then development pushes to test, and test pushes to, you know, UAT staging, staging pushes to production, these type of deployment options really are very process heavy, and they're done under the great cause of quality. We're going to make sure that our application is thoroughly tested. Yeah. Anybody ever fix a production bug? Yeah. So I'm not quite sure this is helping. So ultimately what we want is a consistent, repeatable, automated process. The ability to know that when we push something to production, it's going to work, and that we can do it with a single click of a mouse button if that's what we want. So the agenda of the talk, which I did earlier this month in North America at New Orleans Tech Ed, is broken up into two sections, a good section on philosophy and a good section on mechanics. That said, I've added a new demo, and I'm just curious. You guys can kind of drive this. Number one, I understand probably English is a second language for some of you. And unfortunately, I don't have a rewind button. My wife would love if I had one, right? As well as a pause button. You just be quiet. Thank you. So what I've done is I put a link to the video from Tech Ed North America. And there's a good section where I pontificate and go through the slides in heavy detail. What I'm thinking, and it's up to you guys, is that I'll go kind of quickly through the slides, and then I'm going to spend more time in the demos. I'll be staying after answering questions, and you can watch the video and rewind it multiple times if you want, if you don't get some. Does that sound pretty good? Would you guys rather have more demos, or do you want more PowerPoint? Demos? Yeah? PowerPoint. It's fantastic. Okay. So let's switch right away, and let's do our first demo. Now, what I have here is a website up here. This is brianrandall.com. And what's important about it is two things. We're going to make an update to it right now. This website is hosted live on Windows Azure websites in a North America data center. And one of the things you'll find here is there's a link that'll take you to my blog. And I've already got a blog post up there related to this talk, which has links to most of the stuff I'm going to talk about here. Most notably, if we take a look here, Team Foundation server, the service, how to do continuous deployment with Azure websites, with Office 365, some information about the new in-release product that Microsoft acquired, as well as how to do some configuration, okay? So you've got links on my blog right away, as well as the bottom link right now is to the North America video, and I'll put the link to this talk, which will go up in about 2 days, okay? So you've got lots of information available to you if you don't catch everything. So what we're going to do here is down at the bottom, I've got a section called CD Update. And I have a live copy of Visual Studio. And we're going to go over here. And we're going to go over, this is, by the way, just an MVC4 internet application, file new Visual Studio 2012. Nothing too fancy. And if we come over here to the views and go to home and go to the index, you'll see I've got the links to those images. And there we go right there. So I need a volunteer. Let's see. You, sir, in the front row in the orange shirt. What's your name?
Carson.
Carson? U-N. Yes? Oh, E-N. Carson. And where are you from, Carson?
Germany.
Well, actually, how would you say, how do you want to say hello in German? But not one of the really giant words. Let's go for... Hello? Or, hello. All right. So, by the way, Karsten, have we met before?
No.
No, okay, good. This was not a demo we rehearsed. So, that's the text that we're going to expect to see right there, which currently says, Jason says hello. So, Karsten says hello from Germany. We're going to save this, and if you'll note over here, I have this little glyph. That glyph tells me that I've checked it out from version control, and I am bound to a team project up in Team Foundation server. If we take a look here, and unfortunately they decided to make the dialogue a little better, you'll see it's pointing to brianr.visualstudio.com. So I have an account up in the Azure data center storing my source control. In addition, it has a build configured that when I check in a change, so we'll go back to pending changes, made a change during Madrid talk. And I'm going to click check-in. And as soon as that check-in is done, I'm going to go to the home. I'm going to go to my builds. And if we go to my builds, what we're going to see here is I have a build that is queued currently in the Elastic Build service of Team Foundation service. And in fact, if I go to the home page, and I come over here and click Web Access, this takes me to the home page for this team project up in the cloud. So you'll notice a couple things. First of all, the URL, it's the same one I just showed you. And if we scroll down, you can see this block here showing my build definitions. And we can see I've run a few test builds. The last one was 2 hours ago. And I can also look at the web view to see that this build was executed. And now, if we go back over here to Visual Studio, we can see it's queued. So we'll give us a few minutes. In fact, if anybody has their computer, go to brianrandall.com, and in about, we'll say, well, let's look. In fact, we can tell the last build took 3 minutes. So in the next 2 to 3 minutes, someone wants to check, so you can let me know when it's done. Just go ahead and shout it out, it's done, and I'll understand what you mean. Okay? So the build is now running, and it's updating. Now, the key thing about this is that I was able to do this because Windows Azure websites support continuous deployment from Team Foundation Service as well as from Git repositories. And if we go to take a look at deployments, we can see the history of what I've done. So we'll give it a second. So you can see right now, there's my active deployment. All right? And you notice it says 5:58 a.m., and that's because my clock is self-set to the West Coast. Oh, look at this. Look what's happening now. I have a new live deployment taking place. Now, fundamentally, what I want you to take away from this is that I was able to check in a piece of code, and the good news is that my build had unit tests, so it ran the unit tests, and if my build was successful, it is deploying to production right now. How many of you have a system that works that way today at work? Anybody? One? One. Good. Okay. Then you're in the right talk. This is great. All right? So now, that we'll leave that deploying, and we're going to go back to the slides just for a few minutes to talk about some key things I want you to take away. And we'll come back, and we're going to do 4 more demos, and I'm going to show you actually how I built this and configured it. So this section of this talk is brought to you by the letter C. Continuous. At the end of the day, if you want continuous deployment and you want the benefits, you have to be willing to go down the road to get there. It starts with continuous integration. The idea behind continuous integration is that when more than one human works with another human in a team environment, we are going to take the source code that I check in with the latest source code stored in the repository and bring them together on every check-in. We want to have immediate notification, immediate knowledge of whether or not our code works with our partner's code. Fundamentally, what we have, particularly as applications get larger, one person works on the user interface. Another person works on the data access code. Another person builds the database itself. Another person writes some of the business logic. And we often do it in isolation. The larger the project, you might even work with separate compiled components. You don't even work with the entire source tree. And what has been proven by the industry at large is that the longer we wait to bring all the changes together, the longer we wait to integrate, the more pain and suffering we're going to have. Continuous testing. Now I know, you're developers, right? And for a lot of developers, the word test is a traditional 4-letter word in English. All right, pick your favorite one. All right, or add your favorite non-English word, and I'm sure you can come up with a good one too. We don't like it because we're developers. We're creative, we're writing things, we're building it. That's why we have testers. Once again, that's a fundamentally flawed belief. First of all, you as a developer are the first line of defense. And in fact, if we start thinking about modern development practices, and dare I use the word agile, we start to break down the barriers and say we are all team members. In fact, some practices like Scrum prescribe that to the point that we should be multidisciplinary in our jobs. You are a developer, you are a tester, you are an architect. And ultimately, you need to have empathy for your users. Empathy that you do not want to hand them a piling, smelly application that doesn't work. And F5 does not qualify as testing. When we think about testing, we think about a continuous process that is made up of different types of tests. So for developers, yes, I expect unit tests. Other types of tests, we have manual tests, we have regression tests, we have load tests. But fundamentally, we want to be constantly checking the quality of our application. And if you have continuous integration, you're already halfway there. Because you've got now an engine that will do a lot of testing for you if you provide it with the technology. Continuous deployment is what you're hearing about. So we're going to talk about that this is part of the flow. But you're like, well, why isn't that the last thing? Because there's a little more. Feedback. How do you know you did a good job? You don't get fired? Well, I don't consider that a great metric. right? Feedback is when the user says, yes, you did what I wanted, and here's also what I'd like you to do now. We want to constantly be in contact with our users, which leads to continuous improvement. We can only get better if we're getting feedback. And the problem ultimately is, if we wait too long between releases, we lose that information. We lose the ability to make small corrections, and instead we're always forced at, look how bad we are. Look how bad of a development team we are. We suck. We can't hit deadlines. We deliver buggy software. Well, sure, that'll happen if you go and code for 6 months and don't give your users anything, because there's this little problem. In 6 months, the business changed. In 6 months, the world changes. Whereas if you give your users something every month, 2 weeks, feeling crazy every day, you can make lots of small corrections, and ultimately, it's about continuous value delivery. Now, I talk more about that in the other talk, but fundamentally, you're not just going to magically get there with doing one thing. Modern deployments mean you have a deployment pipeline, not these staged sections where we drop things over a wall, and once it's in that other environment, that other world, we forget about it. In fact, when we start thinking about modern deployment, we start thinking that, well, you know, as we move on to ultimately production, the stages in between are just different levels of the same thing, so that we can get continuous feedback. And if possible, we want to be automated. Once in a while, we might want a human to say, yes, it looks good. We might want to do some sanity checks. Okay? But fundamentally, if we have it automated and we have it repeatable and we get through a couple of those, we start to trust our system. And ultimately, we have to make sure we support a rollback or roll-forward mechanism. Most of us, as humans, as users of computer technology, are used to the idea of undo, of the rollback. The modern deployment pipeline, because of the needs of modern applications, internet scale applications, is that you just roll forward. Well, it's hard to roll forward to a fix if that requires you redeploy everything. But on the other hand, if you're doing updates and only updates one DLL a day or a couple database changes a day, rolling the fix forward is much easier. Now, we're back to that theme. Consistent, repeatable, automated. Now, the next section is brought to you by the letter M. Maturity. This one I'm going to actually go kind of quick on because I rant about it in the video you can watch, because I want to get to the demos. But ultimately, you have to understand the maturity of your organization, your team, and your customer. The big excuse I get from people when we start talking about continuous deployment organizations, particularly when I talk to management, is that, whoa, 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 you know, our users can't handle this change. Really? They're used to that. Right? Look in the corner down there. Right? Pull out your mobile, we'll do it after the talk. I'll bet money that half of you have updates waiting on your phone. Right? And I don't care if it's an iPhone, Android, Windows phone. BlackBerry. BlackBerries do updates? Yeah, I guess they still do. Fundamentally, we're used to this. And guess what? As long as the update doesn't totally hose our system, we like it. Right? We like having the latest and greatest. We like things that make our life better. That means your users are going to be the same way. Sure, they're not going to want an entire new subsystem with 15 new screens and 20 new reports every day. But if you fix that bug they've been asking for, or you add that new feature, they'll happily take an update every day because it's incremental. This I'm going to show you more in the demo, but bottom line, you need all these things to have continuous deployment. Your product is going to have all these pieces. You have to understand what encompasses what you're building and how you're building it. You can't do continuous deployment without version control. You can't do continuous deployment without work tracking. You can't do it without builds. Those are the facts. Now, my bias is that I'm an ALM MVP for Microsoft, and so I'm going to use Team Foundation Server and Service with Visual Studio. But everything I've talked about up to here, you can do with any language, any tool technology that's modern. Right? The Java world, even Macs are finally getting on the program. Apple's taken a long time. Apple's had a very isolated development environment. Now you can do things like continuous builds with Jenkins in conjunction with Git and other things. If they can do it, we can do it. If you can do it, I can do it better. You know, we can sing too. When you think about your production environment, does it support no downtime? Because here's the problem. This is the crap you get. This is a real screenshot from Saturday. I was in London, and I'm flying back to London, and I need a hotel. I went to one of my favorite hotel chains, and this is what I was greeted with. This basically means you're hosed. Because, see, the problem is I wasn't planning on staying in London, and it's Wimbledon, and guess what? The city's kind of full. Hotels are kind of expensive, right? So I thought, I'll use some points. I've saved all these points up. And what it basically says is you cannot use your points. I've hidden the vendor's name, but the point is they suck. They did not have an environment that supports no downtime. Now, they think they're up because their website shows me a web page, but I can't do anything. How good is that? To me, it's just a digital finger, right? Or you're in Europe, so two fingers, right? But either way, they're flipping me the bird. Do you support staggered releases, right? This goes back to your development process. Not thinking we're going to build everything for release at once and deliver it 6 months later. Just a little bit at a time. Continuous value. And do you support A/B testing? Can you let users have a feature, particularly something that changes the user experience, how they navigate through a website, how they use your phone application? And do you get metrics to know which is more successful? And ultimately, have you built your solutions so that you can do this? The modern thinking, and one of the first organizations that gets credit with continuous delivery, is the website Flickr before they were bought by Yahoo. Flickr got to be very popular. When you build popular internet sites, you have to rethink deployment. And they did. And the first step was that they could not test their website in a lab. When you get to internet scale, you can't duplicate the internet. Production is test. Now, granted, when you have millions of users, you really don't want to introduce that one bug that makes everybody ticked off. So how do you do that? You segment which parts of your community get access to the new feature. And then once you've segmented them, whether it's through load balancing, through geo, IP caching, figuring out where they're coming from, whatever, you then enable for certain accounts. Maybe they're trusted customers. Maybe they're beta testers. Maybe they're just the people that you look at their usage that you know will be on the website within 2 hours because they're constantly updating. You give them a new feature. The rest of the world doesn't even know it's there. And you test. Microsoft is doing this with Team Foundation Service. I've been using it for almost 2 years now with my development team. And every 3 weeks they do an update. Sometimes the updates are small and no one knows about it. They're just things that they do. Other times they do a public update, and then they'll do a private update, where all of a sudden I'll see something magical on my homepage. Team Rooms was an example. Logged in one morning, and guess what was there? I had a team room. Now, we had been briefed on the feature, but the point was, all they did was flip a bit. And for a small community of MVPs and some internal Microsoft people, about 50 to 100 people, they had this feature. The rest of the world didn't know. The rest of the world didn't care. Because they designed it so that it could operate in conjunction with the rest of the application. This does require thought process. It's not magical. And in fact, the key from all this that I've said, there's no silver bullet. Okay? So it's two things. It's technology, but it's you, the humans, and your organizations being prepared to do it. So how are we going to do it? I'm done with the slides. Okay? We're happy. So first of all, did my deployment fail? I didn't hear anybody tell me that it was good. But Outlook does. Let's go to Outlook. Oh, look at this. My build succeeded. So a cool thing that we have in Team Foundation server and service is alerts. I can get email notifications when a build succeeds, when it fails, when the status changes, etc. So that means if I go back to the home page here somewhere and we refresh, there we go. Real update. Anybody else check? So I'm not BSing you, right? It's true, right? There we go. That's slick, right? All I do is check in code. You're like, okay, cool, right? But how'd I do it? This turns out to be one of the easiest things to do. Okay? So step one. What did I need to do? It started with Team Foundation Service. So step one, Team Foundation Service lets me have version control. So version control, you see I have a folder called main, source, brianrandall.com, and there is my product. Okay? So I said file new MVC web project, picked internet, I enabled unit testing. I checked it in. So that's step one. Pretty low stress, right? Step two. I went over, let's see, to this. No, I got too many browsers open, so let's change this one, and let's go to windowsazure.com. And I'm going to go to the portal. Now, I'm logged on with Windows 8. Windows 8 is bound to my live ID, so I'm able to log in, and we see me at brianrandall.com. And we can see that I have an Azure website, okay? By the way, the cool thing about Azure websites, I'm going to show you another one later where I'm going to deploy from TFS locally to the cloud. You can use Azure websites for free if you don't want to use a customized domain. So if you just are happy with a test site or you just for fun, you can even do it for free. Because I have brianrandall.com, though, I have my custom DNS. I'm actually at the lowest paid level, okay? That's about $9 a month, so it's pretty cheap. So you can run your blog and your personal site, no problem. And you can have databases and all that great stuff. So if we go in here, right, we see my website, and we see my dashboard. And this shows me what's been happening in the last 7 days. We zoom in to the last 6 hours. We can see activity. But this is where it gets kind of interesting, is we start looking at things here, right? And you start thinking, disconnect from TFS. Well, how do we do this? Oh. All right. Well, let's do the following. Let's come over to brianr.visualstudio.com. And let's create a new team project. And we'll call this Madrid. We'll say create. While that's doing that, actually we'll do it, let's leave it the way it is, give it a second. I'm going to come over here, I'm going to close the Brian Randall project. Okay. And while that's running, we'll go back over to Azure, go back out here, and down at the bottom here, you'll see there's an option to create a new website. So I say new, website. Click create. We'll call this Brian Madrid, because I don't think anybody would pick that. There we go. And this is what I mean by the name. If you're willing to have something in the .azurewebsites.net, this is free. Okay. And come over here, and we'll put this in Northern Europe. Create the website. Okay. So what happens is you get a team project in Team Foundation Service. You get yourself an Azure website. And if we take a look here, this is all done. So now, in theory, if I come over here to home, and we go to connect, configure, notice Madrid now shows up in my list. And that means when I connect to it, I can go to source control, do a get latest because I've already mapped the folder. I can create a new folder, call this demo. And then I'll create a new project. And we'll do MVC, Live Madrid. Actually, we'll call this Brian Madrid because that's what I called the website. And you can call it anything you want. And I'm going to put it in that directory, Brian R, Madrid, demo. Select the folder, click OK. Internet application, sure, Razor, test, sounds good. Click OK. We'll let that work. While that's running, we'll go back to our Azure website. Now I've got the website. And then now, notice I can set up deployment and all sorts of good stuff here. And now it's asking me for, where do you want to hook it up to? I want to hook it up to Team Foundation Service. Now, I'm going to wait, though, because I don't have any code in there yet. All right? So here's my website. Here's the great thing. We're going to come over here and add this to source control. So we'll say add solution to source control. And because I put it in the correct path, Visual Studio can figure it out. I should get a bunch of glyphs. In fact, if we zoom in there, you'll see right there the little tiny unicorn poop. I'm sorry, the little green plus sign. Well, Microsoft went in, you know, they took away all the color, and then they finally found the friendly color unicorn, and they let it walk all over Visual Studio. So we'll check this in. New website. Now, I really should build this to make sure it compiles. And that, in turn, if we go over here to my Test Explorer, and click Run All, we'll double check. And there we go, I got green test. So I can feel good about checking this in. All right, so we'll check this in, 440 items. Let this finish. You can do it, come on. And, come on, almost there. And, please, tell me you love me. You do, great. So now I come over here, Team Foundation Service, but notice local Git repository, GitHub. This is what I think is awesome. I'm going to publish my website through Dropbox. Woohoo! All right, that's what you do when accounting cuts your budget, right? We're going to run our company off Dropbox. Okay. Now it wants to know, what is your Visual Studio account? Well, my Visual Studio account is Brian R. I'm going to say authorize. I'm going to say accept. Now my account has to have permissions. It does. And then now it says, which repository, in other words, where's your source code do you want to use? So I'll pick Madrid, click OK, and away it goes. So you'll see that it's currently doing some work, linking, okay, and it's done. We click OK, and now if I go to Visual Studio, go to Home, go to Builds, look at that. They created the build definition for me. No, really? Yeah. So now, let's see, you, sir. Yeah, you. What's your name?
Steve.
Wow, that's too easy. Well, maybe not. We'll see. Stefan. All right, now we're going to mess with me. Okay. So let's come over here, and actually, we'll just do this. And this is the fun part. Well, no, we'll do it correctly. Never mind. I was going to break the unit test, but you guys have all seen tests fail, right? Yeah, they go red, okay? Let's go to my controller. I'm in the controller. Sorry, I want to go to my view. So let's go to the view. We'll go to the home view, go to index. And we'll say something like, how about right here? Stefan, is it like that? Like that?
Yeah.
Says, hello from Norway, Sweden, Austria. Austria, fantastic. All right. So, well, and you know, by the way, I know if you do any HTML, you guys are cringing right now. What is he going to do now? Something horrible, I'm sure. I'll create a table. No, kidding. Okay. So there's our change. And we'll check it in. Added a new greeting. We'll check it in. And of course, I could be using work items, but watching people type and create work items is boring, right? The point is I can have traceability that every time I check in, I can link it to a work item, and I'll have a full history of what went into each deployment automatically, okay? So now, if we go back to the builds and go to builds, I have a build in the queue. So we'll come back to that one. Let's go to the next one. So far what I did was I said, I want to have a website auto-deploy from Team Foundation service, both in the cloud. But what if you don't trust the cloud? What if you have a super secret listening application that you need to install in a large data center so you can monitor the world? Oh, wait, wrong session, sorry. Yeah, I'm not happy about it either. Okay. What if you have an internal application that's for your company only, doesn't need to be on the public internet, right? Has company data. So what if we had a local Team Foundation server with a website running inside IIS? How would we do that? It's just a little more work, but I'll show you, okay? So this build is running. We'll come back to it. And let's see. Let's go to this one. Okay. So what I have here, and let me give you just an idea of what's going on, is I have another machine over here that is running a virtual domain. I've got a domain controller, SQL Server, I've got TFS, I've got a dedicated build server, which I'm actually using as my workstation. I've also got a production website. I've got a separate machine running IIS. Okay? And these are all Server 2012 virtual machines. Now, once again, I created a website. This one, as you can see from the name and the path, was an intranet solution, but still just an MVC website. I checked it into Source Control Explorer. Okay? So we drilled down in there, local, intranet, etc. And in fact, if I bring up a web browser and go to http://mde08prod, you will see the beautiful website I've created. Sarcasm should be noted. Okay, it's spinning up. There we go. All right, and you can see I did a local update here, so let's go over to the source code, and I'm guessing if we go look at my beautiful code, yep, there it is. All right? So, you guys are getting the fun here, the demo, so let's see. Next is Stefan. Who are you, sir?
Michael.
Where are you from?
Austria.
Also Austria. Okay. Creates a pending change. Local change for local server. Now we'll check it in. And if we go up to the home page, you'll see that there's a build. The difference is, yes, I had to create this. Ah, so what did I do? Well, to create a new build, you simply say new build definition. And you go and set some features. Now, while it's running, I'm going to go through and just show you the one that's already configured and point out the key pieces here. When you create a build definition, the first thing you do is you give it a name. Anything that makes you happy is good, but usually shorter is better. The next thing you do is you specify when you want the build to run. I've got it set to continuous integration. That means every time something is checked in, in a location of the repository that this build is watching. And I'll clarify how you specify that in just a second. A build will kick off. If a build is running, it will wait for this build to finish. Because the purpose is always to take the latest in source control and your check-in. And we want to make sure and see if this build works or not before we do the next one. Okay? You'll notice there's other options there. Manual, pretty easy. Human, we generally don't like that. Okay? Rolling builds. Do you ever get to that time of the month or time of the week when you're trying to get something out and everybody's like trying to check in quickly and everything? Yeah, quick, get it done before you go to the weekend, right? Or whatever. Well, sometimes you basically start hammering your build server. So you can do rolling builds, which is just like continuous integration, except what it will do is batch up a set of changes. I'm not a big fan of this. It kind of has a smell to it. And guess what it is? Let's say you choose accumulate builds for 5 minutes, or check-ins for 5 minutes. So in that 5 minutes, let's say 10 people check in. We're going to take all 10 of those changes, try and shove them together and build them. What happens when it doesn't work? Whose fault is it? His. See ya. Yeah. Not a big fan. You know what? Hardware's cheap, right? Especially with Azure now and Amazon. I mean, forget it. It's cheap. The next one is gated check-ins. Gated check-ins are simple. Oh, and by the way, all these options are available in the cloud or local. Gated check-ins say, yeah, I don't trust my developers. They're idiots. No. What it means is you have a large development team. Maybe you're like Microsoft. Anybody work on a team of developers that work on the same team project or source code, and you have more than 350 developers checking in code? Anybody? 200? Okay, 200. Okay. So, sir, what country are you from?
Cyprus?
Okay, wow. All right. So how many weeks of vacation do you guys get a year?
21.
Weeks? Oh, days. Okay, so about 3 weeks, about roughly 3 weeks. Okay. I'll say, I'm moving to Cyprus. Screw the U.S., man. Half the year off. Sweet. So the bottom line is, let's say you take your team, yeah, let's say the rough work year is about, we'll round it to 200 days. What if you only break the build once a year? How often is the build broken? It's statistically broken about every day of the year, every work day. So what Microsoft said was they have a problem. Their DevDiv servers support over 3,000 people checking in. So if you break the build just once a year and your buddy does once a year, everything's broken all the time. So here's the idea. We'll take your change, we'll get the tip, and then what we'll do is we'll run a private buddy build. We're going to take a look at it first, and then if it's okay, we'll check it in for you. If not, we fail the build, but your bad stuff didn't get into the repository to cause other people pain. Okay? Here's the problem, though. The reason this has a smell to it is that, well, what kind of process do you have before you check in? Do you make sure developers run unit tests? Do you have unit tests? Right? The problem is a lot of organizations are, hey, you know, if it compiles, ship it, right? Which means if it compiles, checking in is good enough. Right? Well, I pressed F5. I did a couple of smoke tests. No. You need to have some kind of fail-safe to say this looks pretty good. People who don't have that will think gated check-in's good because at least keeps the crap from being checked in. The problem is this stops the developer from working because they're waiting to see what happened. So what will developers do? They'll check in less often. Okay? So consider it before you do it. And then finally, schedule. These are good, right? Nightly builds, weekly builds. Okay, that's all good stuff. Okay, now, this is the important setting. This is actually one of the most critical settings for every build you create. First of all, this setting controls what part or parts of your version control repository are being monitored to determine if a continuous integration build should be kicked off. The second thing that's critical about this is that this affects what is downloaded from version control onto your build server. The default setting, because they don't know any better, is the root of your trunk, which means bring everything down. And of course, if you have branches and you've checked in your tools and stuff, that means, yeah, it pulls it all. Many a customer in early releases that I ran into would call me because, you know, we set the builds like you showed us in that class. Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. Working great. Uh-huh. And they go, let me stop you. They go, what? They've gotten slower. Yeah. And in fact, then you ran out of disk space on your build server. Yeah. Because what happened is, over time, they start checking in more stuff, and every build they ran downloaded everything for version control by default every time they built. So first of all, they're saturating their network, filling up disk drives. It's good stuff. You want to narrow down, define just the bits of your repository that have the artifacts that are necessary to build. Critical setting. Okay, so I've drilled down to only download local, because you'll note I had another folder for Azure. This is only bringing down the source code for local. Build defaults, which controller, and where do you want your output to go? Straightforward. And here's process. This is the bit of magic. Now, one of the key things I wanted to show you is how you could do these kind of builds without customizing the build template, without customizing the XAML. Is anybody a Windows Workflow 4.5 expert? Anybody? 4.0 expert? Anybody dream about Workflow? Anybody?
No.
You do? You do. Awesome, dude. You're my kind of geek. The bottom line is, customizing the XAML is one of those things that you can do these basic little things, not too hard, and then you get to a point where you get to learn Workflow really well. And that's fine. Nothing wrong with that. But anytime you start customizing the XAML, you've now taken a dependency as part of your larger process. You need to maintain that. Do it if you need to. I'm going to show you what I did for a customer. Sometimes you have to. But try not to. So what I did was I said, could I do this? Could I deploy to IIS? Sure can. Turns out that what I did was came into advanced, and I just passed a couple extra MS build arguments. And let's take a look at these in God's Editor Visual Notepad. I'll make this a little bigger. It's just two switches. Deploy on build is true. Publish profile equals internal. The web team has done a lot of good work here to make it easy to deploy websites. The core details are stored in that profile that is a part of your solution that gets checked into source control. How nice of them. And so all you have to do is go to your project. And by the way, while we were talking, that build ran. And if we go over here and refresh, we should see Michael says hello from Austria too. Okay, so it works, right? We always like to see demos working. And now, if we come over here and go to the solution, you'll see there's my publish profile. Now, the publish profile turns out is, guess what, just an XML file. Now, there's a nice pretty wizard you can use to run and build it, so that's cool. It'll walk you through and you can fill in things. But because it's an XML file, that means, A, we can automate changes to it. Oh, bitchin', right? Number two, I can diff it. I can see what happened in between. So this is they did a good job here. Now, basically, I took one of the easiest ways I could do it. I said, do a file system deployment, and here's what I want you to publish. And I'm not too worried about this because I'm on my local domain. My build agent is running as a dedicated build account, and I've only given it rights to that directory share to be able to do this. Secure. Because it uses NTLM, there's no password stored in here. And because of team build, it's now automated, so it's consistent. Pretty slick. All they do is set that up. Now, sometimes though you can't get there through an NTFS file share. No problem. The web deploy stuff supports web deployment, supports FTP. FTP, stay away from it if you can, unless it's on a private network, because FTP by itself is inherently insecure. There's all sorts of things with it. The bottom line is try something more secure. So the bottom line is that's all it takes, and TFS will deploy the website. All right? So that's TFS to local. Well, what does it look like if I want to go to Azure? Well, let's take a look. The difference for Azure is that it has just a little more complicated string. So let's go to the definition. Process. Once again, I'm using the default template. I have not customized it. Go to advanced. Okay, this one's a little longer. Okay, don't write down my password. In fact, there, I'm going to take away some of the characters. Deploy on build, publish profile, allow untrusted certificates, and you can be more trusted. Once again, you have to spend a little money to get the more trusted environments, blah, blah, blah. User and password. So the good news, by the way, is I have a link to this, how to try this out if you want to do this on my blog. It's a little more involved, but here's the details. We go to the other solution I have checked in, and this one you'll notice is Azure. This has a website just like brownrail.com, except this is a free one. I'm not paying for it. It's just like the Madrid one. And you'll notice that there is the test and everything just like before. And if we go under properties, there's my published profiles, and there's my web deploy profile. Now this one's a little bigger, but notice that it basically is just some XML settings. And notice I can even do database change deployments through Entity Framework if I want. Oh, that's cool. And the key thing is that it brings down, there's data about my environment. Well, here's the cool thing about this. If we go up to Windows Azure, and we go to the portal, and we log on, all that data that you saw there, like what was the URL, where did that funky username come from, where did those settings for the database content, you know, where did this stuff come from? Well, basically, you go to your website, and you go to its dashboard, and notice there's a link. Download the published profile. Nice. You download that, add it to your project. And now when you put that switch in your command on your published profile, your local team build will deploy to Azure just like I did earlier with the service and just like I did locally. They made it fairly easy to do. And you can make it more secure if you want. You can, you know, do trusted certificates. There's a bunch of other things you can do to really control it. And you can do richer database deployments if you want, if you don't want to use Entity Framework. Okay? Now, hopefully you're thinking about this and going, this is all really cool, but notice we're going from check-in to deployment. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay, let me show you another cool demo, and then we're going to talk about that a little more. I've got about 20 minutes. We're doing really good here. What if you wanted to deploy to SharePoint? Oh, by the way, it looks like Madrid worked. So that means if we go to brianmadrid.azurewebsites.net, and I believe, Stefan, we did you for this one, didn't we? Yeah. Is that the name of the, did I get that name right, by the way? Is anybody? Yes, I did. And I forgot where I typed it. Oh, there it is right there. There we go. Thank you. You guys have better eyes than I do. There it is. So that won't work too. Okay? So that's, you notice I did from scratch? How long did it really take me? Maybe 7 minutes? We spent more time waiting for Azure and listening to me talk than actually doing. Okay? So you have no excuse for small website projects to not be using source control and continuous deployment. Now, Microsoft has this product called SharePoint. Some of you may have heard of it. And Microsoft got the crazy idea that they'd put it up in the cloud. And the crazy thing is customers said, we like that. Because now I don't have to care and feed these SharePoint servers. Now the downside for me as a developer is I'm not a huge SharePoint development fan. It just doesn't do it for me. Okay? I'm being honest. But there's people that like it. So, what if you could build solutions for SharePoint Online and also do the continuous deployment? Well, you can. It turns out that you can come over here, open a solution, and when it opens up, there we go. Basically, what I've got is got what's called an app part. And it's got some HTML and some JavaScript and stuff. And now we have to do the fun part, which is Brian doesn't remember his password, or his account, sorry, because this is a test account. And we're going to go to SharePoint Online. Notice I even have my password saved just in case. I think I know my password. Fingers crossed. Sweet. Okay. So now I've got some text here. And let's add a new item here, H1. Hello from you, sir, in the front. I know you. This is Corey. Yeah, I don't know. Is that right? Oh, sorry. Who are you? Here, Corey. There you go. Different Corey. There we go. Okay, so now I'm going to check this in. Update SharePoint. Now, this one's a little more involved for a couple reasons. Number one, we're deploying from Team Foundation Service to SharePoint Online. So there's a different set of requirements for this. The good news is that if you look at the build definition, a lot of it's the same. Trigger, source settings, build defaults. But I have to tell you some truth here. It's not 100% like the other one. Whoops, sorry. Let me zoom it for you real quick. Too many VMs. Yes, run it. I trust it. Yes, thank you. All right, let me log in. So the build's running, by the way. And now what we'll see here is that this one is using a special XAML template. The good news is I didn't even have to write it. The SharePoint development team and DevDiv wrote this, and they've published it. The links for it are on my blog. Okay. And basically, you just have to download their kit, upload it into your TFS repository, point your build to it, set a couple of properties, specifically what your PS deployment script is, right here. And you'll notice that this is stored up in your version control. And in it, you just have to put some data about where your SharePoint site is, username and password. And what happens is it uses that to do the build and then deployment. Now, what's really cool about this is that I'm not using the Elastic build. I'm actually using my own build server up in Windows Azure, running under IaaS, Infrastructure as a Service, Virtual Machines. So I'm using a team build server that I can control to do the build. But you can use hosted builds, or you can actually do on-premise, just like this, or you can do hybrid. So it's really up to you. And when you deploy a new SharePoint app, you have to trust it. Once it's been trusted, then you can run it, and they give you the links right there. And I'm using a test account, so I don't have a nice domain, right? It's kind of like the Azure websites, but notice, hello, Corey from Stuttgart. But look, this is up in the cloud, up on SharePoint.com. All right? Now, like I said, these demo well, and for some projects, it's a great way to deploy things. Unfortunately, you probably have some more complex deployments, maybe some databases, maybe some things that require a little human intervention. Anybody got ClickOnce apps? Yeah. No? Yes, thank you. I knew everyone has a ClickOnce app. You need something a little richer. Now, there's a couple things you can do about this. One is you can do this. You can hire me and I'll build you a custom deployment tool. Now, I bring this up because I had two different customers in the last 6 months do this. Because when they looked at what was out there in the market, they didn't do exactly what they wanted the way they wanted it. And this is not running because I booted up the VM without doing this. Okay, we'll let that start. I'm only bringing this up as a point that sometimes this is what you will do. You will build a custom solution. There's one key point about the solution I want to point out compared to what we just did, is that we have separated concerns in that there's a checkpoint between a build completing and a build being deployed. Right? Both customers did not want to do deployments from builds because they had to check and make sure it was good. They acknowledged that they didn't have the maturity to do continuous delivery from build. Sometimes you have to be honest and understand what you can and cannot do. Now, the good news, for whatever reason, if this did not start, did it start? Yeah, there we go. Let's refresh. And I just want to show you this from the standpoint of, well, maybe it doesn't want to work today. Never mind, don't hire me. There we go. Okay. So what happens here is you can see we have these different deployments. The good news for my customer is that they now can come in here, click this, go and pick a build definition, pick a quality level like ready for deployment, even pick when they ran it, if I know how to use a mouse, and click start deployment, and they can deploy ClickOnce apps, websites, databases to SQL Server, etc. And they took, one of their deployments took from 45 minutes manually to now it runs in about a minute and a half. So just because you're not ready to do it from the build doesn't mean you can't do this. Now that said, honestly, I would spend more time on my code right now and show you what I built for them if Microsoft hadn't done something nice for you. If you're a TFS customer, Microsoft, a couple weeks ago, started the process to acquire a company that built a product called InRelease. InRelease is a full-featured, automated deployment tool. And what I like about InRelease is it has the extra thing that my customers needed and that you might need. And that is the ability to define different stages and define a checkpoint process. Now, Microsoft hasn't finished the acquisition of the company, so therefore, we don't know if there's any pricing involved, if it will come with certain types of MSDN subscriptions or whatever. But fundamentally, this will be something that becomes a part of the larger Visual Studio family and will be tightly integrated. And the good news is that this product is actually the third version release of InRelease. They have a lot of maturity in their product already. So it's going to be something that a lot of us will like. The good news, by Microsoft buying it, it's probably going to be a little cheaper than it was. And you get Microsoft integrated a little more deeper into the product. So that's a good thing in the long run. So there's two pieces here. One is setting up the release order. And what you see here, is we have set up stages, dev to QA to prod. Okay? And within here, there's some automated steps, such as when I finish the build, it's automatically deployed to the dev environment. On the other hand, before it goes into production, I'm going to require someone say yes, push into production. So let's go to Visual Studio. No, not Visual Studio 2008. Let's go to this one down here. Yeah, Wayback Machine. And let's open up the solution. And this is just a website called Fabricam Fiber's call center. And in fact, if I bring this up and we go to the homepage for dev, we can see Drew Robbins right there and some data for his dashboard, etc. And so this is my dev environment. And I'm going to come over here to Solution Explorer. We'll go to the web, and we'll go to the views. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to search for Drew. Because I think, if I remember correctly, this is, oh, no Drew. Let's go to profile. There we go. So I'm going to change this to my name. Okay, I'm going to save it. I'm going to check it in. good. Comments are always nice. Go to builds, and this build is set up as a nightly build, but I'm going to kick it off right now. So this build's going to run. And what I'm going to be able to do here is monitor as well as adjust the state of my deployment pipeline through the web browser. You can also do this through the WPF app also if you want. Now what you'll see here is that I have some previous releases. I know that I'm not done because my build's not done, so we're going to wait for that build to finish. And this is a local build, so it shouldn't take that long. Last one took 42 seconds. We're at 24, so about 15 more seconds, we'll be done. So what's going to happen here is this is going to build. The build stops, though. There's nothing in the build signature like my other builds that says deploy. What will happen, though, is in release is monitoring this build, and when it sees that the build is done, it can know that it should do the deployment. Now, how does in release do deployments? Well, this is the good and the bad about the product for me. I'm not the hugest workflow fan. I made that. I told you that already. But it turns out that with in release, you build your deployments through workflow. And they have, you get access to the standard workflow toolbox, but notice that they have a bunch of sections here for deploying to Azure, doing database deployments, doing IIS deployments, working with Windows services, you've got rollbacks, etc. Okay? And so you build workflows here, and you chain them together to create your deployment to different environments. Now my build should be done. It is. It's green. And so now if we go to the website and we refresh, notice I now have waiting for approval. Now, what's nice about this is I can see the states by clicking here and see for the dev environment, it was automatically accepted. You see that right here. You also see that it was automatically installed and it was automatically validated for the environment. Now, once I approve it, we basically are saying that dev is happy with it. Let's give it to QA. Great. So I come over here, click it. Oh, and let me show you the QA environment. So first of all, let's go to home. Refresh the page. And notice it now says Brian Randall. But if I go to my QA environment, QA still says Drew Robbins. So now I go back to Release Explorer. Click, or do I leave the dialog up? Uh-oh. Yeah, we don't want you. Go away. No, nope. I just maybe know how to use my mouse. There we go. Sorry, just click Approve. Yes, please. Deploy. I approve it. Now it's switched the stage. We look at QA, accepted, installed, validated, and we get to go through the next part of the pipeline. So we come over here and refresh. QA is now Brian Randall, and I can do the same thing and finally push to prod. Now prod has two steps. We're going to do the release part. So let's refresh the page here. And now I click approve, push to prod. Now it's switched to prod, waiting for acceptance. Ah, okay. So we said QA's fine. Go ahead and have it. But now we added an extra checkpoint. You can determine the checkpoints where you want humans involved and where you want the automated part. So we'll approve this. Please. Push out. And now, if we go to my home page for prod, we now see it's Brian, and we go back in here, refresh the last thing, and we're waiting for validation. And this is separate for another team. Operations is now going to tell us it was okay. But I have this entire workflow that now, if I go back over to in release, I can even see over here. Oh, by the way, sorry, I'm showing you the wrong dialog. This is the dialog that shows us the actual environments. And notice you can add more, remove more, so you can set up whatever you want. And then if I go to the history and look at releases, there's my releases. double click, look at the build, and if we look at my approval request, I can also do it all through here. We can see all the different items that came through, the different stages, and ultimately, I can control the different teams and everything I want, and my website has been updated. So what InReleas is really going to bring to the table is that extra thing that my customers pay me to do because they couldn't find what they want. And some people still want to. You might find that you don't want to use workflow. My customer said, we don't want you to do it in workflow because we don't have experts. We want you to write it in C# and use PowerShell. So that's the way we built it. We built the website, a service, and we wrote a basic workflow engine of our own, but it was written so they had all the source code, and they got what they wanted. They had customized click once things, et cetera, and we created custom XAML templates. With InReleas, you're going to have a standardized process for both customizing XAML, but also for doing the release, which is with Windows workflow, and Microsoft will have this integrated end-to-end. And ultimately, long-term, what's that other big project they have? Oh, System Center, right? We'll be able to get the benefits of things like being able to deploy and then have it hooked into our System Center monitoring if you so desire. But if you don't, you can just do what I did here, which is completely local deployments or even Azure deployments. If you notice on that toolbox, they also support deploying to Azure. So if you have maturity in your organization and you're feeling like, hey, what Brian showed us is something we can do. We can do continuous integration. We can do continuous testing to the point that if a build kicks off and passes the automated test, we feel good about that going to production. You can do it all with a few switches. On the other hand, if your organization hasn't reached that big M word, hasn't hit the maturity level to be able to handle that type of process, be honest with yourself and use either some custom tooling or when InReleas is available, hopefully in the next month or two, use something like that where you can determine which stages can be automated and where you want a human to intervene, where you want some time to say, yeah, this looks good or doesn't. Ultimately, at the end of the day, if you want continuous delivery and continuous deployment and ultimately continuous value delivery for you and your organization, you need to have something that's consistent, repeatable, and ultimately has to be automated, right? Documentation is the bane of continuous delivery. The documentation is the fact that you have a process that with a click of a button does it. So, in summary, thank you for coming to TechEd Europe this year. Hopefully you learned something. If you have any questions, there's no mics this year, so just feel free to come up and ask me questions. Otherwise, enjoy yourself tonight at the country parties. Don't have too much fun because there's still 2 more days of TechEd, and hopefully I'll see you again later. Bye-bye.